This is the Inch Podcast, a production of InsideCollegeHockey.com. Now, let's send it to our podcast host, Joe Gladyszewski.
This is the Inch Podcast, the first of the full 2011-12 college hockey season. My name is Joe Gladyszewski. This podcast is recorded Tuesday, October 25th, 2011. Joined once again, happy to be back together for the Inch Podcast. I guess we'll start by saying hello to our overseas correspondent, James V. Dowd, CCHA senior writer, currently based in St. Croix, U.S. Virgin Islands. Hi, James.
Good evening, Gladdy. How's it going back there on the mainland?
It's we've got snow in the forecast here. I'm sure you have the same.
Something like that.
All right. Also, WCHA senior writer Jess Myers, St. Paul, Minnesota. Hi, Jess.
Glad to have the band back together.
Yeah, here we are. Here we are.
Happy New Year, or new season, I guess.
Well, common nouns, New Year.
Yep.
And Inch editor, columnist, spectacular Mike Eidelbus.
Greetings from mid-Michigan. I'm good.
Good.
I'm ready to roll.
Season's underway. We'll touch on a lot of topics as usual and probably have our episode of deterioration as we usually do. Let's start with the news. A lot of national reaction has come about. The lone independent program in men's Division I college hockey, Alabama Huntsville, has decided that its varsity hockey program will be moving to club status. It was a tough run for UAH. A lot of people are pointing fingers at the lack of a conference affiliation. Bus, where do you stand on this, some of the news that we've seen, heard, and read about this situation at Alabama Huntsville?
Well, I think that first and foremost, you know, there's been obviously a lot of chatter over the last 36 hours, a lot of lamenting another program going by the wayside. And I think that, you know, initially, you think of the kids, you know, the guys that play for the team that have been put into a really difficult situation when College Hockey America disbanded a couple years ago, and you know they didn't have a home, and really, you know, forced to pick up whatever schedule they could manage, and unfortunately for Huntsville, that meant a lot of road trips and. You didn't see a lot of teams willing to make that trip down to Huntsville. As a result, their schedule was really unbalanced. And I think it, you know, when that type of thing happens, it makes it very difficult to maintain a competitive program. And, you know, with all the shuffling and realignment that took place over the summer, it seemed like there was an opportunity there for Huntsville, but for whatever reason, the opportunity just never arose. I know that recently there had been some movement among the Huntsville alums and former players, where they had started a fundraising effort in an attempt to save the program when the writing on the wall became apparent. And it was on the one hand, I think you can say it was too little too late. On the other hand, I think there may have been a solution there to keep the program in place. But I'm not sure whose responsibility that is. You know, we talk about, I think I'll just leave it at there, and I think it was just, there's so many factors involved that you can't really point a finger. I think more than anything, it may just be an unfortunate convergence of events that kind of led to this demise.
Yeah, Jess, you know, some, I know you've spoken out a little bit in social media circles about the conference affiliations that may have been available to Huntsville.
I kept saying, you know, on Twitter and other places, you know, hey, time for this WCHA, this new WCHA that we're going to have, to step up and give them a home. And I stand by that. I mean, I do think that things would have been different and things would have been better for Huntsville a couple of years ago if they would have gotten into the CCHA. All of that's in hindsight now. But here's the one thing I didn't factor in, and a good friend of mine who in the know in college hockey circles called me after seeing one of my tweets and said, you know, you should ask Huntsville if they want into the WCHA so bad. Why haven't they called and said, let us in? And knowing that, you know, maybe a month or two ago, I knew there was probably the writing was on the wall that if you've got a hockey program out there that isn't actively even trying anymore to get into a conference down the road, I think that was a bad sign for the future.
Yeah, this, you know, the way this was put forth by the board of trustees and such, and the chancellor of the University of Alabama system,
for now,
which is based out of Tuscaloosa, not out of Huntsville. You know, it was a matter of dollars and cents. And, you know, I don't pay taxes in Alabama. So what I think probably doesn't mean much to those people. But, you know, we had also had known that several people had stepped forward with pledges and financial plans to sustain and support this program. You know, so I think there maybe could have been some discussion, you know, as Bus alluded to, but at the end of the day, you know, you've got some serious obstacles there in terms of travel arrangements and cost, and those are all things that have to be considered.
Well, it seems like in this entire discussion and in kind of trying, people really want, you know, when something happens like this, people want to point a finger at somebody and say, well, who's to blame? And it seems to me that really who should take the most blame is geography. I mean, that more than anything, I think doom the program is the fact that, you know, Huntsville is so far away from any other program, and, you know, the CCHA did have an opening, but at the time, I think the sentiment was among some CCHA schools that, you know, they didn't want to make that trip. You know, that's a cost that those schools have to incur when they go down there if they become a member of that conference. And for some schools, that's, you know, that's quite an undertaking. So, and I don't know if you would have seen that a similar concern arise in the WCHA, but it's, as it's newly configured, you know, a couple years down the road, but, you know, a lot of the same teams, or a few of the same teams that comprise the new look WCHA a couple years down the road are also ones that were in the, or are currently in the CCHA. So I'm not sure that those concerns would have been alleviated even if Huntsville would have pursued a WCHA option.
Yeah. It's worth pointing out, Mike, and everybody too. I've heard the argument from people, well, it's not that far to Huntsville when you compare it to going to Anchorage or going to Fairbanks. People might not know, in most cases, when you travel to Anchorage or Fairbanks, they pay your way to come up there.
Mm-hmm.
That wouldn't have been the case with Alabama Huntsville. So, you know, you were looking at considerably higher expenses to travel there.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the points that I made on the podcast, back when Nebraska-Omaha had first departed the CCHA, and in that league decided to press forth with 11 teams, you know, people say, oh, they need 12. It will round out the schedule. It just makes so much sense. I said, you know, they're making the decision based on what's best for them. And, you know, I think some of the emotion and I think emotion is a lot of what we've seen in the immediate reaction once this news became apparent Sunday night and Monday morning was, you know, that all the good old days have gone when people looked out for each other. And I, using vague nouns like college hockey did this. Well, no, you know, if Ron Mason made it a point of his to schedule emerging or developing programs, that's a Ron Mason thing. It's not a college hockey thing. You know, I just, you know, there were, you know, Bus, I think you had the best example when I was thinking, trying to come up with some of these vague college hockey things. But when the scholarship status at places like Colorado College and Rensselaer, you know, Clarkson and St. Lawrence were challenged by Division III, Division I legislation, NCAA-wide, you know, that movement did kind of pick up some steam and a lot of people. But that was more just in pooling votes and petitioning and spreading messages than doing anything, you know, specifically hockey-related, you know. So I don't know. I'm disappointed for the people connected with the Alabama Huntsville program. I wish them all the best. I think that a lot of players have gotten opportunities, most recently with the demise of the Wayne State program. So I think these kids will find places to play, many at the Division I level, if they are interested in continuing their college hockey careers. I fully expect that to be the case. A lot of what I would call feigned outrage, you know, people may be emotional about it now, but if you are team blogger from whatever conference, you say, oh man, this really sucks about Huntsville. You know, do you really feel that way? I mean, I just don't, I'm not buying it, so to speak.
Did no, I buy, think the biggest.
Did you buy a ticket to go see Huntsville the last time they came to their building, your building?
I did see them when they played Cornell last year, but I did not. Yeah. I don't.
No, I'm just saying as a rhetorical.
Oh,
question,
to those yeah, people, yes.
For these outraged people, let me just say this too. I always talk about what's the next college hockey program we're going to see, and you know, and I love the idea of becoming more of a national sport at some point and seeing non-traditional areas like the South have colleges that add hockey. For that reason, I liked having kind of a toehold in the South with Alabama Huntsville.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say this, they weren't a new thing. You know, it's not like they just added hockey a couple of years ago to see how it would go. They've been around since, I believe, 1979. Mm-hmm. And in that time, how many other Southern teams have we seen added? You know, none. You're right. So if there was going to be this groundswell of support where, you know, Alabama or Ole Miss or Tulane or Georgia or whoever was going to add hockey and give them kind of a presence in the South, it just hasn't happened, which is disappointing.
And if you're going to add a sport, it's not going to be men's and women's ice hockey. It's going to be men's and women's lacrosse. Bottom.
Yep. A lot of parallels there between lacrosse trying to kind of expand and become more of a national sport, too.
It's more expandable.
Yeah, it is.
You're right. You're right. So that's disappointing, but, you know, exactly. Hey, gave it a shot and it didn't work.
Yeah. And we like the college hockey we have. I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's just me. But
no, I think there's a certain amount of truth to that. I don't, as nice as it would be to see the game expand, I mean, at what cost?
Right.
If you've got somebody like, you know, Terry Pegula at Penn State, who's willing to bankroll the whole thing, then yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But that, you know, that's the exception, obviously, and not the rule. And I think getting to your other point, and I mean, this is obviously going to sound, you know, I think everybody feels bad for the kids, obviously. And like you said, a lot of them will get another crack. Most, if not all of them will. either at D1 or D3. Or if they really, love Alabama Huntsville, they can stay and play club, and, you know, their scholarships are honored. You feel bad for the coaches, obviously, and the fans as well. You know, they had a small but very vocal fan base there. But looking at it from a big picture perspective, I mean, who misses Wayne State?
Yeah. There you go.
Is there a hue and cry that, if we only had Wayne State?
Yeah, I really wish Iona was coming in this weekend.
Right. And not just that. And I think another thing that kind of popped into my head earlier today was, you know, you mentioned kind of the outrage or the, you know, the hand-wringing or regarding the demise of this program from, you know, from a team blogger for somebody in, you know,
whatever reason,
Anchorage, yeah, for example, or wherever, not singling them out, or St. Cloud, wherever the place may be. You know, these programs could have helped out Huntsville by going down there and playing a series.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there wasn't really a big rush for, you know, for teams to head down there and play a couple of games.
Yeah. Let's give a stick salute real briefly to Lake Superior State, Bowling Green Air Force, Ohio State, and Mercyhurst. Those are the five teams that are playing at Huntsville at the Van Braun Center?
Von Braun.
Yeah. And then Omaha.
Which I've heard is a nice rink, by the way. I've never been there, but people who played down there said nice place.
So you've never been there, so it's your fault.
Yeah, my fault. No, it's funny. I did a
They're
radio
also
thing.
Playing two games with Nebraska Omaha in Nashville.
I did a radio thing earlier today, and somebody said, you know, Alabama Huntsville's folding its program. If you live in Minnesota, you probably didn't know Alabama Huntsville had a program. And I corrected them and said, now, if you're a Bemidji State fan, you know a lot about Alabama Huntsville because that was a great College Hockey America rivalry, and it was a great Division II rivalry. I think they played each other for the national championship two or three times at least in the 90s.
It was at least four, if not five, I think.
So the Beavers lost a rival this week, which is kind of too bad.
Yeah, that is true. All right, let's any last thoughts on that?
I miss Wayne State.
Chargers, you miss Wayne State. I miss Iona.
I miss Findlay.
Findlay Oilers?
Yeah, I miss Findlay more than I miss Wayne State, but I miss them both.
All right. UIC?
I don't miss that.
Let me just say this. Since you brought up UIC.
Kent.
I thought about that. That was 15 years ago that UIC dropped its program.
Yeah.
And at the time, the thought was, we're going to put all these resources into basketball and become more of a basketball powerhouse.
Yeah.
Let's look 15 years down the road. How's that working out for you?
Right.
Just curious. Right. I did look it up. They've been to the NCAA tournament three times. They've not won a game. So, good work.
Hey, they beat Illinois Urbana-Champaign last year.
Wow, okay. Well, yeah, that was worth losing a hockey program for.
Yeah. They had to clear dates. They do women's roller derby in the...
At the UIC Pavilion?
Yeah.
Dowd chiming in with the Chicago knowledge.
Yeah.
Proud of you. All right, let's move on to some hockey. The teams that are playing and will continue to play. A lot of surprising positives early in the season from programs that maybe haven't had the best years in recent seasons and not much was expected from. Let's start with the Michigan Tech University Huskies. Jess, I know you were impressed with, and Dowd, for sure you can speak to this too, impressed with the attitudes and energy that Mel Pearson seemed to be bringing in the summer months. Jess, I guess you can start here, but what's the word up in Houghton?
It's kind of been a perfect storm of good things happening all at the same time for the Huskies. And, you know, and God bless them. You talk about a long-suffering group of passionate fans. They earn every win they've gotten. But, you know, talking to Mel Pearson over the summer, you know, this was a guy who said, hey, it's not as bad here as everybody thinks it is. You know, the cupboard's not that bare. We've got a good base to start with. He's recruited some guys. And the big thing I noticed looking at their box scores, you know, the first couple weeks where, you know, they come from behind, they beat AIC, and then they sweep a series against Wisconsin with two overtime games. The big thing I'm noticing is they're healthy. I mean, these are not a huge influx of new names. It's a lot of the same names we've known, but guys, you know, like Jordan Baker and Steven Saigo and Brett Olson and guys like this who, for whatever reason, have been banged up and out of the lineup just repeatedly in the last couple of years. And with those guys, you know, healthy and doing well, it's a fun time for them right now.
James, what does Mel bring to the table there? You've known him a long time.
Yeah, Mel, you know, first of all, Mel's a great guy. He's easy to talk to, easy to get along with. And I think that, you know, talking to him in good times and bad, and there weren't a lot of bad times at Michigan, but, you know, when they're on a losing streak or a couple years ago when they had that bad stretch that they had to win the CCHA tournament to make the NCAA tournament there, he's a very, like, positive and upbeat person who can bring positive energy to the team. And I think that, you know, Michigan Tech was ready for that. You know, there's a lot of bad things there and everybody talks about the bad weather and all that. But, you know, if he can keep that team upbeat and that program upbeat, changing the tone can do wonders. And I think he's capable of that. And I think he's capable of getting more out of players that he has than you might think. I mean, if you think about the Frozen Four last year, or even the NCAA tournament as a whole last year, that Michigan team was not as good as some of the other ones there, especially defensively. And you look at that defensive effort, which had a lot to do with Mel's scouting and preparation, and, you know, look at they were able to hang with the North Dakota team that was really a much better and more talented team. And so he's shown an ability even recently of getting a lot out of his players, and I think his positive can-do attitude is, a breath of fresh air up there.
You've checked in with Ferris State recently. This is a team that's launched straight into the top 10 of the Inch Power Rankings, 6-0-0, two CCHA wins over Miami, a team that we expected a lot from. What's going on at Ferris?
Well, you know, I guess they're scoring goals for one. That's something that I wrote about last week, and that, you know, from year to year and time to time. A couple of years ago, they had that good team with Blair Riley and Casey Haynes and Chup, but that was really one line. They're finally showing multiple dimensions offensively with, you know, two or three lines of guys that can score goals without getting away from playing defense. And, you know, they lost Pat Nagel last year, and he was obviously a great goaltender, but they had Taylor Nelson coming back, and he had shown in the past that he could be good, and this freshman CJ Mott has been really well. I think he's 3-0-0 as well. So what I like about it is they've been able to make a change and take advantage of some maturity and, you know, moving, I guess, you know, guys getting older, more mature, and being able to take advantage of their skill without getting away from what they have always done best, and that's paying off. You know, beating Miami twice is, even though Miami isn't off to a great start, is still an achievement, and it'll be interesting to see how they fare at Michigan this weekend.
Yeah, that's another big series. They've had a lot of those seemingly early in the year.
You know, James, this is kind of something that we talked about a little bit over the summer when we were doing the A to Z and kind of getting a read on their lineup. I mean, I think we kind of liked their makeup. It was just a matter of whether they were gonna be able to score enough. Mm-hmm. And you also mentioned in talking to Bob Daniels this summer that he really liked what he had in his cupboard.
Yep. Yeah, he did. You know, he spoke all the way back to, you know, the first time I talked to him when I was writing about Travis Ouellette, who's their leading scorer right now. He's got 6 goals in 6 games. You know, he said Travis is poised to be one of the better players in the conference, if not in college hockey. He's got the skill. He had a really slow start to last year where even Travis will admit himself, maybe he didn't live up to his own expectations, and Coach Daniels talked about sophomores coming in there and, you know, they're not freshmen anymore, and so they expect it to come naturally, and so maybe they just don't push as hard. And towards the end of the year, he really came on. He's off to a great start this year. But what Bob Daniels said is it's not just him. You know, he really just liked some of the chemistry and some of the, like, the little glimpses he's seen last year, and knowing that some of these guys were coming back as juniors and seniors, he was just really optimistic that they would click. And he seems to have found the right chemistry and the right, you know, the right mix with some of these guys. Now I know Olette, he's playing with, a guy named Eric Alexander, who's off to a great start. And then Kyle Bonus and Jordy Johnson and Kurzinger are, they're kind of interchangeable as first and second lines, if you ask me. But, you know, both of those combinations just, have been consistently very good, every single game.
Another team is that's that I'm really interested in is Northern Michigan. James, what's going on with that program? Have you had any opportunities to see them play yet? And what are you seeing and hearing?
You know, I think that they obviously have a great coach. Walt Kyle has, you know, year in and year out shown that this team can be competitive, especially when it comes to playoff time. And it really was a matter, again, a little bit like Ferris State, where there was some good talent there, and you had some guys that are coming of age. Justin Florek, who I think we had, I don't know if he was the player of the week. We at least
Yes, he was.
You know, had a great weekend, and he really has emerged. He's got the size and strength and that presence in front of the net. You know, Tyler Grahn, and then you've got Kyle Fulmer is a really good, and Scott McCauley, both defensively are able to contribute offensively. So the pieces were there. Again, just rambling on, I guess, good goaltending as well. It was just a matter of whether that could all come together and click. And so far, it looks like it is. I guess, the returns are early there, but they did meet Michigan on Friday night. They took advantage of Sean Hunwick's ejection from that game, you know, scored a bunch of goals against Michigan's backup goalie, and then the next night hung tough. At the end of that game on Saturday night, they you know, were really impressive defensively. The really stupid penalty in the final minute. You know, I can't remember who it was at the moment. Somebody took a contact to the head. You know, major penalty in the last minute of regulation, and they were able to kill that penalty the last 40 or 50 seconds in regulation, and then the remaining 4 minutes and something in overtime to hold on to a shootout. They lost in the shootout, but I think we at Inch agree that that doesn't really count. So
we do. We very much happen to.
We have a position paper on that, don't we?
Yeah.
Yes. You know, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head, though, with Northern when you said, you know, these are early returns, but that's a good thing for this team, because in the past, the early returns mm-hmm. have typically been anywhere from below average to downright awful. You know, they've always been, it seems like since Walt Kyle's been there, they've always been a second half team and kind of making this late push and, you know, making a little bit of run in the CCHA tournament. And, you know, they were in the NCAA tournament a couple, 3 years ago. But to see them playing this way early, you know, and getting out to a decent start, which has been a rarity for Northern Michigan in the recent past, you know, at least in the Walt Kyle era, you know, that I think that portends pretty well for this team.
Yeah, 0-9-10, 2-5-1 start, and they made the national tournament. Then last year, 0-4-1 start, and the thing that you kind of saw last year, you know, with a couple of exceptions here and there, but, you know, once they got into the bulk of the season, you know, they didn't have any bad losses. You know, they were losing teams that were quite good, you know, like, you know, Bemidji, Notre Dame, Denver, you know, Miami, Western, you know, people like that, Michigan. So they, you know, had that kind of, you know, and ended up in the middle of the pack there before a first-round playoff series upset loss to Bowling Green. But, yeah, I think I'm going to be interested. One thing that we, you know, we're talking about some of these surprising teams, and we'll actually loop back around and talk about some of the teams we've been less impressed with or expected more from, you know, here in a bit. But, you know, let's not just say that everything is all set right now. You know, it's just we're talking about the first 3 to 4 weeks of the season, and we'll get a lot more clarity through the month of November, and then up until about the holiday break, then we'll be ready to really figure out what's going on.
Well, I think one thing that we should bring into play is just the you know, and again, we talk about early returns, but I think that the CCHA as a whole is looking pretty encouraging. You know, Bowling Green has been, you know, the bottom feeder in the conference for the past couple of years, and they're obviously playing a lot better. I think the same can be said for Lake Superior State. You know, you look at some of the teams that have in recent history been sort of in the second tier in that league. You know, they're obviously raising their compete level. There's no question about it, at least early on, which at least, you know, through the first month of the season, looks like it'll make for an interesting race as the season progresses.
Yeah. You know, Michigan 9th and Miami 11th. That's how we expected it.
Right.
Well, let's move a little bit toward the east here with some of these teams that are also doing good things. I think Merrimack was a program that a lot of people would be keeping an eye on because of their excellent season last year, historically successful. But you know, you lose a guy that was, you know, so dynamic in Stefan DaCosta. But there they are with 4 wins in 4 games so far this year. So that's a program that I think has built upon confidence gained last year. And really, I mean, the schedule hasn't been, you know, super terrific, but they've only allowed 4 goals in 4 games this year. So they're definitely getting it done at that end of the rink. You know, and Joe Cannata is a Vancouver Canucks draft pick and picking up right where he left off last year for Merrimack. Providence had an exciting start with wins over Boston U and pretty sure it was Northeastern.
Yes, I believe you're right.
Yeah, but, you know, it was UMass, I'm sorry. And then, you know, then played Minnesota Duluth, who, despite their maybe record not being what people expected, is still a talented team and defending national champion. So Providence, you know, I think the best thing about these surprising early season teams is the belief that develops, you know, in the room and among the guys that you know, that can go away when you get into losing streaks over the course of the year. So good on those programs.
I think one thing that you kind of have to take into account with Merrimack, and I, you know, early in the season, obviously, you know, when we came out with our preseason rankings, we had them ranked pretty high because I think we liked the pieces that they had coming back. But you know, obviously it's a big change for them this year because nobody's going to overlook them. I think that, you know, once they got on a roll a little bit last year, there was still some, you know, some questions about whether they were real. And, you know, about 2/3 of the way through the season, we obviously realized that, hey, yeah, Merrimack is for real. Well, now everybody's prepared for them and they're still doing, you know, what they were doing last year. And I think that's obviously a very significant step forward for that program.
Gladdy, you're in Central New York, and you know, we know that ECAC teams haven't generally started up yet, but you know, beyond the usual suspects in Cornell and Yale and some of the teams we've heard from recently, who else do you like in the ECAC?
Well, we mentioned in first shift last night or this morning, whichever way you want to look at it, Harvard is just, they're not playing until, they don't start until November 4th and 5th. Everyone else gets underway.
Yep. Then they go on Christmas break.
Yeah. Then they have an exam break and a holiday break. And no.
Kwanzaa.
Yeah. The so that's a team that, I'm a little bit out on a limb with, and I guess by virtue of that, Inch is as well with our preseason forecast, because many people projected Harvard to finish last, whereas I projected them to finish fourth. So we'll be interested to see there. I think there's a lot of talent there, but the teams that have really been a nice watch so far, and it goes back a little bit to what I was saying with the confidence thing and showing you can get things going in the right direction early. Clarkson, they have had a
good for them.
Yeah, they've had a soft schedule, but they've got four wins in a row. They went up to Alaska for one of those early season Alaska weekends. Got a tie and a loss out there to Anchorage and Alaska, and then got like four straight wins on home ice. They're scoring a lot of power play goals, two effective power play units. New coach there, Casey Jones. So you know, we'll see what we can get out of Clarkson when things maybe get a little tougher and they get into the league schedule. They're at Bentley for two this weekend. And then Colgate, and Colgate goes to that confidence thing and maybe that Merrimack thing, whereas Colgate didn't have the type of overall season that Merrimack had. They had an unbelievable playoff run. They went to the ECAC hockey championship weekend as the 12th seed with big wins over Yale and I think Princeton. No, it wasn't Princeton, but you know, they had a great run late, and you know, you watched them throughout the year last year, and I said the same thing about Harvard. I was like, these teams are much better than their records, and there they were. So, it was a good run last year, and that confidence was built. The whole team went on a European trip, played some games over there in the summer, and traveled for 10 days or so, I believe. So Colgate's an interesting watch early in the year. Austin Smith is a guy that we've, you know, had our eye on. He was a draft pick and expected to do some pretty big things, and he's playing like it this year. Now he's a senior, so he's off to a great start. So we'll see what we get from Colgate, and then we'll find out. And this week, everyone else pretty much gets into full regular season action. Early disappointments. Miami. Bus, Dowd?
Yeah, definitely off to a slower start than I think they would like to be. I think there's been a lot of change there. Obviously, last year they were, I mean, they were deep, but they lost a lot off the top, like, even over the last two or three years. And I think that just some of the people they're expecting to step up and take some of those intermediate roles, and that I think they were confident would do so, are just not not playing up to par yet.
Yeah, I think that pretty much sums it up. Based on what I've seen from them from a distance, it sounds like they're getting decent goaltending. It's just, you know, you lose a Hobie Baker Award winner, you lose a guy like Carter Camper. They've got talent on that roster. They had an unbelievable recruiting class, but, you know, 99 times out of 100, you're not going to find a freshman to step in and replace that kind of impact and leadership. And, you know, I think 9 out of 10 times you're not going to find an upperclassman or somebody on your roster that can step in and replace that kind of impact and leadership. So I think, you know, it's a little bit of a struggle for them as they try to replace, guys like those two who, don't come around all that often. So I think maybe they're kind of looking for a little bit of balance among their roster and some guys to like James said, step in and go from maybe complementary role players to a little more of a leadership role. And it just hasn't happened early. It just hasn't clicked. And, you know, they've, they haven't had an easy schedule to start. I know that, you know, they went to Ferris. They did play Colgate, and yeah. I believe that was at Colgate, if I'm not mistaken.
It was a split.
And they played Bemidji State early, which was also a split, and they didn't have Riley Smith in the first game in that series. And Bemidji State's obviously not a bad program either. They've got some talent on that roster as well. So, you know, I tend to think that Miami, there's just too much there for them not to get it for them to get back on track, but you know, just a little bit of a rough start for them.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned goaltending. One thing I think is worth noting is, and you still have to have the utmost faith in both Cody Riker and Connor Knapp, because this is the fourth year in a row that I think they'll prove themselves as, you know, as championship level goalies. But again, early small sample size, but you know, Connor Knapp right now is, they're both 1-2-0, but the Connor Knapp save percentage is still right about where it has been, 91-6 or 916. But Cody Reichard's, you know, given up 10 goals on 70 shots, so that's 857, and that's just below, you know, any kind of acceptable level for college hockey. So that's maybe the first time we've seen any division between them, because they've really been probably, you know, 5 or 10 percentage points off each other, not you know, not anything like this before. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out going forward, if there is any kind of division, and if Blasi will go to Connor Knapp if this, you know, more consistently, if it stays this way.
Sounds like North Dakota.
Yes, it does.
Any panic buttons being pushed out west, Jess? I know we said this isn't the forum to do that, but, you know.
No, I don't think so. You know, I wrote last week about Minnesota Duluth starting out, you know, two games under 500, which was obviously a disappointment for them. But what struck me talking to Scott Sandlin after they get swept at home by Minnesota is just how calm he was, and just said, you know, yeah, hey, we lost a couple games, and you want to win every game, but it's October. It's not something we're gonna panic about. The one team that, frankly, we didn't expect a lot from, I picked them for 12th in the WCHA, but Minnesota State has got a real mess on its hands right now, just with injuries mounting the way they are. They gave Denver a pretty good game last Friday, and then just had nothing left in the tank for Saturday night, and wound up giving up 10 goals. And they have a bye week this weekend, and thank goodness for them, because they're just a mess right now of guys who are on the shelf and need to get healthy if they're going to be competitive.
Yeah, they didn't have a full lineup for that Saturday game, right?
No, they didn't. They had 18 total dressed for that one, and then they lost somebody else during the game, I think, too.
Yeah, they had 11 forwards and 6 D-men dressed for that for the Saturday night game at Denver, and then in the first period lost another D-man.
Wow.
Yeah. So they're down to 11 guys, 11 forwards 11 and 5 defensemen.
Ouch.
And you know, they only went out there with, you know, 12 forwards and 6 defensemen to start. That's all they had healthy.
Yep. Yeah, that's all the traveling party. Not the lineup. But
the one team, I don't know if what to say, positive or negative yet, because I just cannot figure this team out. But if anybody has a clue about Wisconsin, let me know.
Right.
You know, they're obviously getting real good goaltending from a couple of freshmen to beat North Dakota twice last weekend, despite being outshot by a wide margin. And that's after going to Michigan Tech and getting swept. So that's a team that, you know, wait and see. You know, it will be very interesting to see what they do this weekend against Nebraska Omaha, which is a team that I think can beat anybody on any given night.
Yeah, that team is going to be interesting to watch for me this season, that Omaha team.
Yeah.
So
they got some nice pieces there, and obviously a guy who can coach a little bit.
Yeah, I look at North Dakota too, and I don't know if they're I don't know if you'd put them in the negative category, but they're obviously, you know, obviously Aaron Dell has not been very good to start off with. You know, kind of, didn't we see this a little bit last year with
Eidsness had a rough start last year, which is how Aaron Dell got there.
Yeah.
So you know, obviously I don't think you push the panic button in Grand Forks at all, because there's, you know,
A good team.
They're going to be fine, but I think it bears watching that Dell, who was so good last year, has done a complete 180 so far this season. So it's something that, you know, certainly merits keeping an eye on, that's for sure.
Agree or disagree with this statement, Jess? The challenge for the first, you know, maybe till January 1st or so, for the likes of Omaha, North Dakota, Minnesota, and say Minnesota Duluth, is not letting CC and Denver get too far out in front.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Just because I think CC and Denver are probably the two that everybody's kind of holding their breath about, saying, boy, if they get hot, we're in trouble.
Yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned Minnesota. The Gophers are a good team. They're not a great team, but they've taken significant strides from where they have been in the last couple of years. I've seen a lot of them already in the early goings. They're physical. I really like Eric Halla. They've got a freshman named Sam Warning, who's out of St. Louis, who has found a real niche on a wing on the second line and is doing some kind of fun things. So the Gophers are in the mix.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of their game Sunday.
And they do have some coaching stability, as was mentioned. Don Lucia did sign a 3-year extension, so that will answer a lot of nagging questions that people had had for the last few years with them missing out on the NCAA tournament for 3 consecutive years.
There you go. And it didn't take a loss to North Dakota State or whatever was the
football guy
to get that coaching extension.
Oh, goodness, yeah. Yeah, so. Yeah, they're 5-1. If they were 1-5, he might have gotten like a 7-year
deal.
Yeah, there you go.
Based on what they do with other sports at Minnesota.
Yes, yes, indeed.
I'll tell you this much: I saw a lot of the series a couple weeks ago when Minnesota played Duluth, and I think they're a good team. But they might be the most exciting team that I've seen, at least early on.
Yeah.
You know, if you go see the Gophers play, you're not going to get shortchanged. You're going to get your money's worth of offense. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
I mean, they like to fly up and down the rink, and it's fun to watch.
Nick Fugstead had a nice size frame to start with. And over the summer, I think someone showed him a picture of Zdeno Chara and said, you should be this. Because he came back to school just massive. I mean, the amount of muscle he's put on and is playing a real fun role for them as their top line center. Not only moving the puck, but, you know, playing a physical game, and that really brings a new element there.
Yeah, good deal. Good deal. UNH, not such a good start.
Ouch.
Man.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I like the first shift line about someone shutting them out early in the season, and at the time we thought that was a big deal.
Yeah.
Are they still stuck on one goal?
One in the league. They had a 3-3 tie and 5-7 loss against St. Cloud this past weekend. But.
So the good news is they scored some goals.
Yeah, that's a start. That's a start. So, yeah, they got... I guess some ways to go there.
Well, you talk about a team that...
DiGirolamo, man. 825, save percentage, 520 goals against.
Fuck. Yeah. Ouch. Talk about a team though, that lost a bunch off the top. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, their top 3 scorers last year were all seniors, and Blake Kessel.
Yep.
So, yeah. I mean, Stevie Moses is back, but Paul Thompson gone, Mike Sissel gone, DeSimone gone, Kessel gone.
Yeah.
There you go.
They gone.
So, yeah. They'll get her going. They'll be fine in the league. BU, I'm kind of waiting. I think they're waiting to figure out what they are. They've had some good wins and they've had some not so good losses. Maybe they'll just wait till beanpot time and then kind of get hot. Take it back to the old school.
They usually peak then, don't they?
That's right. I guess that's true.
So. I heard from a friend of mine in Hockey East that UMass has goalie issues.
I'm not sure. I think they got more issues than that.
Okay.
So yeah, they're gonna have some ways to go, but BC is real good.
Mm-hmm.
I think Merrimack's quite good. I think BU's the most talented team or the second most talented team. And then, you know, who knows what you get with Maine, you know, with Vermont, you know, what's New Hampshire going to turn into, if anything? So yeah, there's some stuff going on there. It'll be an interesting watch. Anything else?
Not that I can think of.
Hockey.
Is there anything anything that warrants mentioned in Atlantic hockey?
You
know, we should probably give a shout out to Holy Cross for beating BU this past weekend.
Yeah, good win there. Yeah, as Ken wrote, Ken McMillan in our first Atlantic Hockey publications of the year, they didn't have a non. I think they didn't win a single non-league game that first weekend. 0-14-2 or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're playing a lot of good teams, and obviously most of those games are on the road. Yeah, RIT's win over St. Lawrence was one of the few.
Yeah.
That's what we got there. Air Force off to a 2-0 start in the league. RIT got taken apart pretty good by Union at home Saturday night. That's a tough little place to play up there. And Union came out and scored 3 power play goals in the first period, and we're up 4-0 and a 5-0 win. So that was a little surprising, I thought.
Glady, since you mentioned Western New York, University of Buffalo, is that going to happen?
I don't know. I mean, could.
Okay.
I don't
know. Well, you know, like I said earlier, I'm the one who's always looking for the next program, and that's one we've heard some buzz about.
And I'm the one that's always looking at the programs we currently have.
Yeah.
I don't cover University of Buffalo because they don't have a team.
When they do.
I'll let you know as soon as I get the press release.
I'm always looking for the next one. You're concentrating on what we have.
Yes.
You see the irony that I'm married and you're not?
I'm bird in hand.
Yeah. Guy.
So that's the way I look at things.
Got it. So,
yeah. Deterioration? Anybody? Anybody? What's the best thing about living in the ocean, Dowd?
Well, it will be weather during hockey season as we get a little bit further along here.
The first guy in history to fly north to the Frozen Four in Tampa.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
I guess I won't have any trouble with weather delays getting to all the hockey rinks they have down here.
Right.
Yeah.
You got your snow tires on?
Yeah, it's... Did you at least
bring rollerblades down there?
I actually don't have rollerblades. I got golf clubs, you know.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's like perpetually the hockey off season.
I like
that. Got to golf. But yeah, at least it's civilized enough that I have the internets and access to cable and satellite, so I can continue to keep up with the games, and so that much is good.
It is good.
If you have DirecTV, maybe not. But
yeah, true. The sports bar down here,
the sports bar.
Well, wow.
Sounds like War Road.
Yeah,
it's just like War Road, Jess.
there's a sports bar here, and they actually have like 2 different cable systems, DirecTV and Dish Network, because of all the weather, you know, like the weird tropical weather and clouds and things like that, you never know which satellite's going to work and which cable is going to work, so they can switch back and forth. But they just better hope that NFL Sunday, that DirecTV never goes out, because they'd be a little screwed then. But
yeah. Quinnipiac has 35 goals. They've played 8 games, but it's pretty good.
If we're back on hockey for a second,
yeah.
One other thing I think we learned is that, and I think I mentioned in the season preview, there's a lot of pressure on Sean Hunwick, and in half a game of him not playing, I think that opinion was validated.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
And yeah, sometimes he snaps under all that pressure.
Yeah, no kidding.
Apparently.
You know, he's a mature kid, though, and he's you know, a hard worker and generally pretty level-headed, so I think he'll learn from that experience. But, you know, that it was rough after that.
Yeah, that was that Friday night game, yeah.
Well, and based on kind of what I read about that game on Friday, it sounds like the Northern Michigan kid came barreling right into his kitchen. And
yes.
You know, you got to, at some point, you got to protect yourself.
Yep.
Yeah. No, I don't really, you know, care to comment on the merits of him decide, you know, his actions in the heat of a moment. I mean,
right.
We've seen much better reactions in the heat of the moment. We've certainly seen much worse. But, you know, I think it just really came to light that Michigan, if they're going to do anything this year, needs Sean Hunwick to be the Sean Hunwick that we've seen the last, you know, I guess what, year and a third.
You know, it brings up an interesting point, and I hate to get too far into hockey talk when we're into deterioration, but
there's always room for hockey in the Inch podcast.
You know, it makes you wonder if that's not a strategy that some teams are going to employ, is, you know, go at the net, keep driving, and, you know, if there's a little contact with Hunwick, or, you know, if you knock him down a little bit, so be it.
Righto.
Yeah.
You know, he's not a big guy, and if you can get under his skin a little bit, you know, who knows?
Yeah. And that so far is the only way anybody has really, I guess he had some rough games early in the year last year after the success he had in the playoffs the year before, but really he's been pretty unflappable. And so if being aggressive around the net, you're right, if that's the way you get to him, then, you know, maybe that's it. Especially a team like Northern that's got guys, you know, big power forward type of guys.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, they're a pretty straight line team.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, and while we're on the topic of Michigan, anything new to report on John Merrill?
Well, there were rumors. I think most people that follow it are aware that, you know, there were rumors that he was at a Plymouth Whalers game and was considering leaving, go to Plymouth. But the last that I heard, and I guess this is not directly from him or, you know, anybody really super close to the situation, was that I guess storm had blown over a little bit, and that he will be staying at Michigan. Now the question is, the other thing that's been reported by some of the local beat reporters is that, you know, Red was saying they weren't sure that Merrill was going to meet whatever the conditions were for him to be allowed back on the team, you know, to start practicing as those 12 games, you know, as we get up to those 12 games, the completion of those 12 games. And, even to the point where I think there was some mention of David Brandon, the athletic director, being involved in that decision. So, again, I don't want to speculate on what he did, because I really don't know. I know some people, you know, close to Red that weren't aware of this situation when I asked him about it, were very surprised to hear that there was that severe of a penalty. So, certainly it's something, some kind of serious matter, and it'll be interesting to see if he begins to take part in practice and gets back on time, because it sounds like there was some doubt over that. But I think the doubt about him staying at Michigan has subsided for the moment.
It's probably fair to point out that he had a little bit of an issue with the
That's true.
With the under 18 program, what was that, 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
Yes, yeah, that's correct. Yeah, because, yeah, 2 years ago.
So, but it sounds like he'll be back, so.
Yeah. What else? Anybody? World Series? Who cares?
I didn't hear from Dowd there for a little bit. I thought maybe he was using Tony La Russa's bullpen phone.
Schmozzle. The Phillies are playing, right? No? Oh.
Right. The Phillies Yankees.
Yeah, exactly.
Those two unbeatable teams.
Right. You know, living in upstate New York, central New York, where I do, there's a lot of Yankee fans around. And I couldn't help but just be confused by them talking about this collapse by the Red Sox on the night when they led 8-0 in the eighth inning and lost the game. The Yankees did to make all that possible, or help some of that be possible, I guess. So that was bizarre.
Yeah, definitely.
NHL, anything? Jess, you're in the center ice world now.
And I got a team to root for again, which is fantastic.
Yeah, they don't even have to win, and people just love them.
No, they're like 2-5, and I don't care.
You loved the Wilds.
My Jets are back.
You loved the Wilds when they came in.
I cared for the Wilds, but I never loved the Wilds.
I don't even think the Wilds love the Wilds.
And I still care for the Wilds. I'm but you know, the Winnipeg Jets were my first love and are again my first love, and I'm happy to have them back. And they've got some fun guys on that team. A lot of names we know. Blake Wheeler, for goodness sake.
Yes. I will be a big Jets fan when Zach Redmond eventually makes it up there.
Nice.
Fair State. That guy's a player.
Nice. I like it.
I hope they don't take any boats to games.
I got it. Okay. you may be besmirching one of Gladys' Rams, so be careful.
I don't think you made it that far.
Yeah. He was cut.
How about the line in Vancouver? Second line was David Booth, Michigan State, Ryan Kesler, Ohio State, and Chris Higgins, Yale. Not a bad little unit.
I like that trade, by the way.
Yeah, I do too. But
That's a good get for the Canucks, I think.
And they spectacularly lost to the Oilers tonight.
Oh, they did.
In Edmonton.
Nothing, nothing like score updates on a podcast.
What game were we doing that with last year?
It was a Kings NHL playoff game.
I thought it was baseball. Football or something.
No, I thought it was a high school hockey game.
No, I remember
it was high school hockey.
2 months later, we did a summer podcast, and you gave a final score for anyone who was still waiting.
That's right.
Some guy out there was like sweating for 2 months.
Every morning, it's the homepage clicks refresh.
They were just going on the power play, and the podcast ended.
Good thing we don't watch too much 5-day cricket test matches. Otherwise, we really confuse people when we record this on day one and people listen to it on day three or day four, and they're like, "Oh, it's a live score update." It's like, yeah, that was 3 days ago.
True.
I don't watch nearly enough cricket.
We don't have a cricket podcast yet.
I live in the West Indies now. I'm trying to acclimate myself.
Good deal.
Inside college cricket. Huntsville should add cricket.
There we go.
Hey, as part of my new job, I found out in the South, college fishing teams are a big thing, so college cricket is not that far-fetched.
I saw that somewhere, like on a like Wednesday afternoon ESPNU, like, you know,
yeah, these pro bass fishing tournaments,
yes,
will usually have a college tournament in conjunction with them.
Right.
And, you know, Florida's team will head out in their boat, and Alabama's team will go out in their boat.
Wouldn't they all go out in separate boats?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No. I mean, you wouldn't put all your guys in the same boat.
Well, I think you put, like, your top two guys in a boat.
Oh, okay.
Or something. I'm not even sure.
Well, let's talk to our business development specialists about maybe moving into this realm. There's got to be a market there. They got the internet in the South, right?
Yes, do.
Barely.
Yeah. Oh, I hope so. We got a Frozen Four coming up there.
Hell yeah.
And even though Alabama Huntsville's going away, they will play the host the Frozen Four this year, and they will play the tournament. I've confirmed that.
That'll be a good Frozen. I've been interested in watching the Detroit Lions this year, but every time I see them at home, I kind of shudder from that Frozen.
Yeah.
That place. Good football rink. Not a good hockey rink.
No.
So.
No, it's a great football. Great football. I should mention that I went to Notre Dame this past weekend for their
new hockey
inaugural game at the City of Compton Family Ice Arena.
Ice Cube dropped the first puck. Straight out of Compton.
Easy E's kid.
They should definitely start coming out to that music.
Oh, yeah.
Straight out of Compton. West Coast gangster rap fits right in under the Golden Dome.
Yeah.
Tell them where you're from.
Jess Myers. Love it.
I'm expressing with my full capabilities.
Yes. Yes. Do they play those types of songs when they go on the road? Straight out of Compton.
MC Ren.
Yeah, Saint nice Plus building.
Oh. Have St. Cloud State there? Was famous for playing some nasty gangster rap in their locker room after games.
Oh. Have you been to Miami's new Katy? I know it's not new anymore, but.
No, I haven't. But I have heard that the similarities between the two are
similar?
Prominent?
I guess. Yeah, prominent I think would be the right word. It seats 5,000, which is probably about the right about the right size for Notre Dame.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's a right size for a lot of schools around. Great sight lines. The video board in there, which if you're sitting in the press box it feels like it's in your lap. It's so huge. It's the definition just jumps right off the screen at you. It's loud, and it's kind of got a little bit of that old school, you know, Boston Garden, Maple Leaf Garden feel with the way there's the second tier of seats kind of hang over the lower tier.
Yeah.
I wasn't at ice level or I didn't go down to ice level, but I think you get that feeling that everybody is kind of right on top of you, hanging over the ice. It's a very intimate 5,000 seat rink. And I think there are some striking similarities to the Miami rink. And I think that as we move forward and as teams look at or schools look at building new facilities, this is kind of going to be the size and the route. This is going to be the model from here on out.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know. I can't remember if we talked about this on podcast in the past when the news of this new ring came. But for people who, I don't know if people who haven't been there, been to a game at Notre Dame, understand like what an improvement this is over where they were playing before. I mean,
oh my God,
it was like a giant dome that had a curtain pulled across the middle, and then a rink with one side of permanent seating and three sides of the temporary bleachers and good crowds and all that, but just
yeah, it was literally,
for lack of a better word, it was not not worthy of the program that the standard of program that Notre Dame's become in the last 5 years or so.
Yeah, the old rink was basically the equivalent of the Pistons playing basketball in the Silver Dome.
Or the Frozen Four at Ford Field.
There you go. just on a much smaller scale. Basically a rink in the middle of a big room curtained off. So, I think, Kevin ZCR Hockey East writer was at the game as well. He lives in the area. And I think he put it best. He said, he's been to a few rinks. He said that night, this is the best college rink I've ever been in, and that's only because I consider Ralph Engelstad an NHL rink. Which obviously I think there's some truth to that, but
yeah,
I think it's the perfect size. It's cozy. It's a nice building, really, really nice.
Good deal.
And I think as we get down, I think Michigan State eventually is going to be looking at building a new rink. I saw that mentioned someplace locally a week or so ago, and I can't remember where I saw it, but...
I mean, they have to.
Sipple had that in his notes after that golf thing.
That's right. That's right.
Over the summer.
They have to, though, if you look at the big...
What's up, George Sipple, if you're listening? How you doing, man?
Yeah, really, if you look at the Big Ten, they've got a...
Two classics and, with Yost and Mariucci that, maybe aren't as modern and...
Ohio State and Wisconsin, which are almost identical.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Penn State.
Yeah.
And then... I think I'm going to start calling Penn State's rink to be Terry World.
Nice.
The Peg.
What about...
Omaha has talked about a new rink as well.
Yeah. What's that?
Omaha has talked about a new rink on campus as well.
Yeah, they have.
Playing downtown in I think it's an 11,000 seat place that, doesn't have the atmosphere that they once had when they played at
I think it's bigger than that.
Yeah, you may be right, and maybe closer to 15. Long way from campus and probably a lot more seats than they need. Omaha was renowned when they started up. They played at the old Civic Auditorium, which had like 8,000 seats. And
that place was awesome.
Yeah.
Go back to the yard. Go back to the yard.
Right. But they, given their ideal world, I think would try and replicate that with something on campus that's more in the 7,000 or 8,000 seat range.
Yeah. I don't even think they need to go that big.
Yeah, maybe not.
Dow, did you see Ohio State's buckets?
I'm sorry, did I see Ohio State's what?
Helmets?
Yes.
For hockey?
Oh, hockey?
Yeah. No. Oh. Ho, ho, ho.
Do they have the stripe down the middle now?
They do. They are gray with a black and white and red stripe down the middle.
Oh, yeah. No, sorry. Yes. Yes, I did. Now I think about it. Now
and
I pulled it.
We said this when Big Ten started. Everyone should get on board.
Yep.
Penn State, Michigan State, Wisconsin, Minnesota. Let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Well, Minnesota has the M on the side of theirs,
I guess.
Yeah, but Minnesota's worn gold helmets forever. I don't see.
I was gonna say, Minnesota's helmets are pretty distinctly Minnesota. They've got.
Hey,
you want the Badgers to wear white helmets?
Yes.
Oh, stop!
I love white helmets.
Oh, no.
Michigan State's white helmets look awesome on their hockey. White helmets are great.
I don't like it.
Yeah, Jess. Our fashion sensibilities have clashed once again.
Once again, is Wally Shaver on the podcast?
Spent some time in Simcoe, Ontario recently. Sorry.
Chris Cuthbert.
Yes.
I should mention also...
Isn't that the home of Wayne Robeson?
Notre Dame rink.
My man taking a shortcut.
Oh, yeah, the emergency exit?
No, not that. Windows on one end.
Mm.
I heard a rumor they're doing that at Yost. Like where the windows actually used to be, you can see them kind of. They're bricked over now, though.
Yeah.
That was maybe the coolest thing about the old Mariucci Arena was the windows.
Yeah, it definitely was.
They played an afternoon game there. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
And, you know, the new Mariucci has windows, but they, you know, you can't really see the outside from your seat.
All right.
It got me to thinking the next school that builds a new rink needs to put like a big one of those old school like marquees on the front of the building. You know, like a movie theater would have when you put the letters up there.
Sure. Isn't Indianapolis's basketball arena similar to that, where they did it like an old gymnasium style or something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's pretty good. Yeah, I agree with that, Bus. Those are great. We'll watch an old footage like that. Those displays.
Rangers versus Montreal.
Yes. Liston versus Clay.
Well, the legendary story about Hobie Baker when he was playing for Princeton was the marquee would just say, Baker plays tonight. Wouldn't even list the teams because he was the draw.
That's great. All right, fellas, last call. Dowd, anything?
No, that's about it.
Jess?
I'm good. Boss? Welcome to the new season.
Yeah. Boss?
Nothing.
Got nothing.
I got nothing.
I think this was a good rehearsal. When do we start to record?
Yes. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to our first podcast of the season. We'll have them every couple weeks or so as is tradition. For James V. Dowd, Jess Myers, and Mike Gottlebus, this is Joe Gladyszewski, and this has been the Inch Podcast.